She was born on the Dakota Prairie and raised and schooled in New England. But when Chandler O'Leary and her husband landed in Tacoma, Washington, they knew they had found home. Chandler took a sketchbook with her everywhere she went. She turned her many visits to the nearby San Juan Islands of Washington State and the neighboring Gulf Islands of British Columbia into a guide. Her book, On Island Time, A Traveler's Atlas, is filled with her charming illustrations of small towns with candy-hued storefronts and the everyday images of life near the sea in the Pacific Northwest. Sadly, Chandler died of a severe case of pneumonia just a few weeks after we recorded our interview with her. So we present Chandler's Travel with Rick Steves interview about Canada's Gulf Islands as a tribute to her talent and memory.
Thanks for having me, Rick.
Yeah, so I got to get the terminology right because we've got the same archipelago of islands and it's cut by the American-Canadian border.
That's right.
So south of the border, San Juans.
Yep.
North of the border, Gulf Islands.
Yep.
The body of water, which I used to always think of as Juan de Fuca Strait, Strait of Georgia, Puget Sound, now collectively...
The Salish Sea.
The Salish Sea.
Yep. And the Gulf comes from, it used to be called the Gulf of Georgia, but that's no more either.
So I like the Salish Sea.
I like the Salish Sea too.
That's to remember the original inhabitants.
Yes, the Coast
Americans.
Salish peoples, and there are many different cultural groups there, but they have been there for millennia. So it's so nice to honor them.
And I noticed in your book, you talked about Native American culture, especially, I think you find more of it in the Canadian side. Mm. You can actually see totem poles in the original place where they stood.
Yes, it depends where you go, and it depends on which culture was there and what kind of carving they might do. But yes, there's so many examples everywhere from Vancouver up to all the way up to the tip of Vancouver Island and in between.
Well, it's like a tide pool of nature and culture on a vast scale. And of course, the thing that makes these islands so characteristic, I think, is they're buffered from the open sea by this massive island, Vancouver Island. Let's start off with Vancouver Island. What do we know about Vancouver Island?
Well, it is the largest island on the west coast of North America. And I've driven as much as you can drive on that island, and it is massive. It feels like you're driving forever. It protects the smaller islands in the inland waters from the open Pacific. So it's kind of created this whole ecosystem.
And
just
conversely, on the wild side, you've got shipwrecks and massive salmon.
The graveyard of the Pacific.
Yeah. Oh, man. And I've always been mystified or enamored by the ocean side of Vancouver Island. But, of course, most of the people and all the tourism is, most of the tourism is on the lee side of the island.
Yeah. It's good to think of it that way.
On the south tip, we have a little bit of Britain.
Yes, we do in Victoria. You can have a cup of tea. You can sit under a totem pole with your cup of tea, if you please. It's this really interesting cultural pastiche of all these different people who have been there throughout the years. Also, Chinese culture there, Hawaiian culture.
Oh, yeah. Chandler, way at the far north of the region that we're calling the Gulf Islands is a very popular place with yachters. And maybe otters too, but yachters for sure. And that's Desolation Sound.
Yes. So there's up there are the Discovery Islands, which is this huge archipelago in this labyrinth of inlets and bays and sounds. And most of it can only be reached by boaters.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of islands in there that you can take a ferry to. There's Quadra Island and there's Cortez Island.
My mom and dad lived for the islands and they had a boat. And we would go to Desolation Sound and meet other boaters up there. And I remember when they would turn the corner and enter that sound, they would see a mountain on the horizon. It looked a lot like the Matterhorn.
Ah, Mount Denman.
Mount Denman, yeah. And they'd all put their thumb up, like their thumbs up. And it was just that now we're home.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was this desolate. It's called Desolation Sound, apparently
for a reason, by
Spanish explorers when they got up there. And it is desolate, but it's also curiously warm. And I swam up there, and there's just balmy water.
Yeah. It's surprising how you have these little pockets that are different from everything that's around it, or little microclimates on some of the islands.
That's it, yeah. In fact, that part of the British Columbia coast is called the Sunshine Coast, I think.
I think that's a little bit of a lie.
Yeah, that's kind of like
it's
calling...
It's more of a tourist
it's
slogan.
It's like calling Greenland, Greenland.
Exactly.
But when you go up the Sunshine Coast, you get to literally the end of the road. Mm-hmm. And the very end of Highway 101 is a little town called Lund. And from there, it's the leaping off point for those places.
For Desolation Sound.
For Desolation Sound.
You know, and it's funny, when you go to Lund, there's a sign that says, it says the end of the road, and then somebody's crossed out end and it says start.
The start of the road. Well, it depends on which way you look at it. But One thing I remember when I was a kid in the Gulf Islands was narrows. This is where there's a narrow stretch, and when the tide is rushing, the water is forced through there, and it creates whirlpools, and it creates a surf, and it creates all sorts of danger for a boat. My dad would, maybe he was just being dramatic for us kids, but he would go around in circles a couple times to work up a full head of steam, and then we'd go crashing through that surf. But people now kayak through that.
I'm not brave enough to do that. I do kayak sometimes, but not like that.
I think you featured that in here. I guess you were sitting on the shore with your sketch pad.
Yeah. I like to kayak in very calm waters.
You know, it occurred to me, your name is Chandler O'Leary. And I thought, what does Chandler mean? And I looked it up. And Chandler is a shop that outfits boaters,
boaters,
right?
Yes. And so on my research trips to these islands and all my vacations up here, I see my name over and over again.
That's so good. I think it's so right. Chandler O'Leary was a gifted illustrator and creative author of A Guide to Americana-themed Road Trips on the West Coast. Her most recent work is a traveler's atlas of the islands of Washington and British Columbia called On Island Time. Chandler passed away from a sudden illness just a few weeks after the book was published. You'll find links to Chandler's books, artwork, and her prior interviews with us at ricksteves.com/radio. And you can view her urban art legacy on the streets of Tacoma, Washington. Chandler, when we think about it, we have to think about access. How are you going to get up there? And, well, of course, Vancouver, B.C. has beautiful state-of-the-art ferries. I mean, British Columbia really has cool ferries.
It's really fantastic.
And they cut right through the Gulf Islands, and you can take a car. You can also, the cruise ships leave Seattle, and they leave Vancouver. And there's an inland ferry that leaves Bellingham, right?
Yes. Are you talking about the Alaska Marine Highway? Mm-hmm. Yes. So that you go right through the Inland Passage that way.
And that's not a fancy cruise ship. That's a working boat.
It is. And you can pitch a tent on the deck.
Yes. And people love that. Talk about a great classic way to vagabond your way up the Inland Passage all the way to Alaska. Talk to me a little bit about the Gulf Islands proper. We've been talking about Vancouver Island and Victoria, which is the big tourist attraction, Desolation Sound, where yachters go. But you know, that whole body of, collection of islands between Victoria and Vancouver, just north of the border, the Gulf Islands. What are your highlights? What should we know about those islands?
So what most people think of as the Gulf Islands or the Southern Gulf Islands is this cluster, this archipelago. It's the Canadian half of a larger archipelago that includes the San Juan Islands in Washington State. And the Southern Gulf Islands are a major tourist destination for Canadians and for international tourists also. Salt Spring Island is probably the most famous. It's also the most populous. About 30,000 people living there, I believe. And it's kind of, there's a lot of backpackers there. There's a lot of kind of hippie types and wellness types because, of course, there are hot springs on the island. But it's a great place for artsy types. There's a studio tour. Also there's a lot of artisanal farmland there. There are heritage orchards there. They have an apple festival every October. That's just fantastic.
Salt Spring Island. Okay.
So that's the one that everybody seems to know about. But there's a whole bunch of others that you can get to on a ferry. Then you don't need your own boat. There's an inter-island ferry that goes from Vancouver Island to Salt Spring, to Main Island, to Galliano Island, to Saturna Island, and to Pender Island.
Okay. And in there you'll find historic ports and charming farmsteads. And
yes. You can kind of choose what fits your personality. If you want to get away from humans, go to Saturna Island. There's hardly anybody there, and it's windswept and beautiful. If you want to have a spa day, go to Galliano Island. If you want to have the local history and the little quirks, go to Main Island. There's a little tiny museum there, a little farm
stand. I love the kind of the cozy, romantic, old world charm. You go, you know, if you're biking around one of those islands, you'll find farm stands where they're selling, you know, homemade jams and chutneys and vinegar on the honor system.
On the honor system. I love it. Or bouquets of flowers or eggs. You need eggs on your bike? I don't know, but they've got them.
And eccentric people. My memories are, you know, getting up in the morning, get in the dinghy and go across the bay. And there's an eccentric old guy who innovated this kind of breakfast, like sort of a breakfast jack or something where you got a piece of bread, a piece of cheese, an egg, a piece of ham. And then he cooks it in a coffee tin And he had a thriving business going on.
That's great.
Yeah. And he was famous in the Bay. And he was the eccentric old guy down there that was earning a living selling all the boaters their breakfast.
That's fantastic. You know, the other thing that's a tradition on some of these islands is hitchhiking. And you think about, oh, is this safe to hitchhike? But it absolutely is there. And in fact, on Pender Island and a few of the others, they have car stops that are kind of like bus stops. You can wait there, stick your thumb out, and hitch a ride.
Chandra, if you could just share with me your most memorable or enjoyable experience in the Gulf Islands.
Oh, it's so hard to pick
one. I know.
But I think for me, it's finding all the little homemade quirks that people have. So they have funny mailboxes, or they'll hang a Sasquatch upside down from a tree so you can find their driveway when you're looking for their house.
Nice.
Or, a hockey stick with a flag coming off of it. Little homemade bus stops so their kids can wait for the bus without getting wet in the rain. It's those little things that really feel like the islands to me. It feels like you're in your own little world, but it's completely unique, and it's very, everybody's put their own mark on it.
Yeah. I've got the same charm for going to these islands. I don't get a lot of souvenirs when I'm traveling,
no.
But I've got two things in my house that came from these islands that we're talking about. A beautiful example of pottery made on the island, and also a beautiful embroidery made on the island. And every island seems to have its marketplace. If it has a community, they've got their summer market.
Absolutely.
Every Saturday or whatever.
Yep.
And that's when they all come together and they celebrate what they've been making and what they want to share.
That's right. I'd love that. They have things like free stores where people donate things and you can pick it up. And they have festivals to celebrate whatever they're growing there in that season. I just love that. Thank you so much.
As a daughter of immigrants from India, Anu Taranath grew up in America feeling like she was caught between two cultures. Now she consults international travelers and coaches students at the University of Washington on how to deal with the discomfort and challenges they might experience in their travels and in their studies in other cultures. Dr. Taranath's book, Beyond Guilt Trips, Mindful Travel in an Unequal World, has won a number of awards. It was even named one of the best travel books of all time by Oprah Magazine. She joins us now on Travel with Rick Steves to look at how American travelers can be ready to build connections across cultures and foster a global perspective. Dr. Taranath, thanks for joining us.
Hi there.
I'll call you Anu. Is that okay?
Yes, please.
Now, we live in a country that is the dominant culture on this planet in a lot of ways, and I think it's natural for a country that lives in a massive culture to tend to be ethnocentric, as opposed to people who live in a small country. Smaller countries, harder to think you're the norm. What's the value of Americans traveling and getting to know our world?
Many Americans don't know too much about what happens outside of their borders. They haven't had to. And traveling is one way of making that kind of knowledge palatable and in front of you. It's right there.
You can't change the channel.
It's happening right in front of you.
Yeah.
It's live.
Right.
What it means to be outside of your own borders and boundaries is you see the ways that people are doing incredible work fighting for the rights of their community. They're working to create space for people to live vibrant and joyful lives. That is humbling for Americans to see. Americans perhaps have a sense that we are the center of all that is good. And no, actually, there's so much goodness around the world.
You know, it's reasonable for a very good, thoughtful, high-minded American to really believe that we are the pinnacle of goodness and that we have a unique angle on that. And it is quite humbling to travel. I always say India, which is your heritage, is my favorite country because it just really wallops my ethnocentrism.
Yes.
It makes me less self-assured.
Self-assured, it makes you have to question everything that you thought you knew about identity, power, what it means to have privilege in the world. You know, we have a sense these days that we're part of a global community, right? We all want to be global citizens. That's a buzz phrase at universities these days. And I think instead of simply going for Ethiopian on a Monday and having Vietnamese on a Thursday and kind of thinking that's what global citizenship looks like, I think it's actually more of an opportunity to think about the links between us and them. any us and them that you want to think of.
Did you mean going to a restaurant for Ethiopian one day?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Okay, that's one way to be global.
Right.
You could be an expert in that kind of globalism,
yes,
and still be very insular.
Absolutely, right? And so really rethinking what we mean about being a global citizen.
Okay, well, that's your mission. I suppose that's part of your reason for getting a paycheck at the University of Washington, is help these students get the most out of their travel experience. And that's very important for a well-rounded education, a higher education.
Absolutely.
Now in our country.
Yes.
So what might a student or family sending a student abroad be more mindful about so that that student can get have the right mindset? You got to pack a certain mindset to have,
yes,
a good trip. What mindset should we pack?
I would probably shift that question a little bit and say it's less the mindset that we pack and more the mindset that we unpack. We've got a lot of unpacking to do as Americans. Americans are enthusiastic and kind-hearted in so many ways. Americans often haven't had to struggle. Many Americans, I won't say all, but many Americans, especially those that I see on my programs, they haven't had to struggle as much as perhaps other kinds of Americans,
mm-hmm,
or many people around the world. And so how do you figure out who somebody else is in the world unless you think about what it's like to be them? How do you figure out what it's like to be someone in your community?
So what is your challenge these days with,
yeah,
American students,
yeah,
and how they relate to the other 96% of humanity?
I am so fortunate. My students are good-intentioned. They're thoughtful. They're kind. Many of my students come back from foreign study, from study abroad, rethinking travel itself. They're really glad that they went and had the opportunity to see and experience, but they're unhappy with the way that travel often unfolds, with folks from the privileged global north going into perhaps less privileged global south environments, maybe on a, one can say, poverty tour, slum tour, to go and see things.
And this is an awkward thing for me,
mm,
because I'm a very fortunate person,
mm-hmm,
and I can travel anywhere I like, and I like to go to the developing world,
yes,
and I like to walk through the barrio and talk to people,
yes,
and see people grinding their corn into, little cakes, and
yes,
hear about their struggles, and look at their adorable children, and see the ladies down at the well with the jugs on their head.
Those are the typical images that come up, right?
Typical images, yeah.
Right.
But in a certain way, it's voyeurism. I have a round trip ticket, and,
yep,
I can come home and contribute to a charity or whatever. But there's a matter of stewardship to me. If you're going to spend,
yeah,
that kind of money and you really care about those people, you need to come home and, to me, be a global citizen the way you live your life and the way you vote.
I think of it as in terms of going from a me to a we mindset, right? We are often thinking about ourselves and only ourselves. What happens if we widen the scope? I think the most incredible comment I've received from a student is somebody who came back from India with me and said, you know, I think the most important thing that I've learned here is that it's kind of just like my home.
Wow.
It's sort of different, of course, in so many ways, but it's also just filled with regular people doing regular things. And I did not know that before. It seems so small, but it's actually a very important, profound comment.
We're all just trying to make it on this planet. It's so exciting to think that travel can actually be a good investment of time and energy if we can all learn more to have empathy with each other. Dr. Anu Taranath, best wishes with your work as a teacher with an ever more important topic.
Thanks very much.
You'll find a link to Anu Taranath's website with this week's show at ricksteves.com/radio. Daniel Siddiqui found that graduating with an economics degree during a recession and no job offers required a few creative steps outside his comfort zone. He left home in California to meet the people of every major city in America and learn what they do for a living. He explains next on Travel with Rick Steves.